The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Too often, we think of the body as a collection of parts that we can replace as they wear out. It's time to change our view of the body and start thinking of it as an integrated whole. Welcome to Rethinking Orthopedics with your host, Mary J. Rogel. Imagine what might become possible if we think together in a different way about our dynamic and adaptable bodies. Now, here is Mary J. Rogel.
Good evening and welcome to Voice America Radio. You're listening to Rethinking Orthopedics, and I am your host, Mary Rogel. We're broadcasting today from the Loop in beautiful downtown Chicago. We're just minutes away from the Millennium Park in Lake Michigan. My guest today is Dr. Dane Shepherd. Now, back in my first episode of Rethinking Orthopedics, I mentioned that there was an osteopathic doctor who had rearranged my face with his hands while I was just beginning acupuncture school. And I mentioned that that experience had had a profound influence on how I practice acupuncture and oriental medicine. Well, Dr. Shepherd is that osteopath. And this show is the first time that we've seen each other since he treated me 30 years ago. So welcome, Dr. Shepherd. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you, Mary. This is exceptional.
Now, Dane, let's go to that first time there when my experience of being treated by you. I had been treated by other osteopaths prior to that, but you did something totally different from what other people did. How is it that you were able to do things with your hands that others never even attempted?
Well, I had an unusual instructor named Viola Freiman in La Jolla, California, that taught me cranial sacral manipulation. It's indirect technique. It's a balancing technique. It's very gentle. So those were the techniques used on you. It really wasn't taught in the schools around here. In fact, I was the first one to teach them. It was not accepted. And so I had to put on the courses in my own apartment to get started.
Glad you did.
Yeah.
Okay, so you trained with Viola.
Yes.
And you had gone to regular osteopathic school in addition.
Right.
But you did more than that. You did acupuncture on me.
Yeah. Well, we had problems with our first child, and there was a thing called hyperemesis gravidarum, so the mother was throwing up a lot, and I got very excited, and I had back pain, and then so I went to my instructor, Paul, and he treated my back with acupuncture, and I went singing down the street, and I said, Paul, do you think you could do something for her? And he came every other day for 2 weeks, and then she sat down and had a steak dinner with us. And so I decided to go to acupuncture school. That's how it started.
Well, and the irony is that you and I went to the same acupuncture school.
I know. Amazing.
It is amazing. I didn't know that at the time, though. So you're trained in osteopathy with special techniques. You're fully trained in acupuncture.
Yep.
And you're also trained in homeopathy.
Yes. Homeopathy is a subspecialty of pharmacy. Started well over 200 years ago. It was popularized by James Tyler Kent, who used to practice in the Marshall Field Building right next
really?
To my office. Yeah, I actually treated one of his patients that he treated when she was a little girl. So homeopathy is a good complement to the type of medicine that we practice because there aren't side effects to these drugs, the ones that we have to contend with every day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll get into more of that a little bit later. So you've had a lot of training. You've been in practice for 36 years.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm wondering is, you know, we call the practice of medicine practice for a reason, because we all evolve as practitioners. How we practice changes over time. How have you changed over the 36 years that you've been practicing?
Well, when you called me and you told me that this revolution had happened to you, I was only in practice for 5 years. Now it's like 36 years.
Right.
And thinking back, I didn't know very much then. And I was surprised that I was able to pull this off. So, yeah, there's been a huge evolution in my thinking. And part of that evolution came from treating in 4 different countries, 3 different continents, because I got to see how other doctors were trained and treated, their interpersonal relationships with the patients, and all of that evolved things for me, especially culture and how that affects the disease expression and the way you need to treat a patient.
So where have you practiced?
Quito, Ecuador, a place called Riobamba, Ecuador, which is kind of a resort city up in the mountains, in the Andes Mountains, about 12,000 feet up, where we started the first osteopathic hospital in all of South America. Also, Santa Fe de Bogota in Colombia and in Spain, and several places in the United States, New York, here in Chicago. Also the East Bay, San Francisco, and now in La Jolla, California, where I currently practice. Mm.
So over this period of time, how has your philosophy of medicine changed?
Oh, wow. It's really hard to describe. It's more like listen to the patient. They will tell you what's wrong and what to do about it. And observe the body language, because that's how the subconscious speaks to you. And a lot of that triggers illness and disease. Pay attention to the culture they came from, because they're speaking to you in that language. And be aware if they've moved around from company to company or through marriages or different states. All of those things have evolved and been layered on. And I saw physicians in Ecuador in particular, they had to do everything. They did postmortem autopsies. They did plastic surgeries. They past anesthesia, did internal medicine, tropical medicine. I mean, they were one-stop shopping. And so I began to see that physicians outside the United States were actually trained better than we were.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So if you had to very quickly say what your philosophy of medicine is, what would you say?
Balance. Balance, and the responsibility of the physician is to reconnect the patient to whatever they believe is their higher power.
Now, you've had a lot of experience in a lot of places. You've had a lot of training. I'm hoping that you can give us a little bit of orientation about how osteopathy is different from some of the other branches of medicine, because for some of us, we have a hard time telling what the difference is.
Yeah. As an osteopathic physician and surgeon today, I think that, you know, it's hard to discriminate between an MD and a DO, and the DO being the osteopath. But I like to think of us as an MD plus. We have an extra 1,000 of hours of training in diagnosing and treating the body wall. And it's actually a form of internal medicine. It's not just structural treatment. So I think that we're different than the chiropractor, because they solely do that type of thing. We're different than the MD, because they don't do it in general. And so we're the blending of these two forces together. There's lots of variations in the DOs and the type of techniques that go on. But basically, everybody has the same premise. We know that the body wall is an important factor in disease. And in fact, the memory of that disease and the memory for the cure of it is hidden in the body wall most often.
Hmm. Hmm. That is really interesting. Now, you say that you're both an osteopathic physician and an osteopathic surgeon.
Correct. We were trained in all the branches of medicine, neurology, pharmacy, internal medicine, and surgery. I studied orthopedic surgery for 3 years. I didn't complete the fellowship because I just didn't like the barbarism of it. We treat everything under the sun and more. I mean, we do everything that an MD does.
Okay. So basically then, osteopathy and medicine share a common base in medicine.
Exactly.
And osteopathy and chiropractic share a common base in manual therapy. They do it differently, but...
Yeah, and many times I found that my philosophy of medicine was better understood by the chiropractor than it was the MD.
Interesting.
I felt more akin to the chiropractor in a certain way, although we as a profession practice gentle techniques versus what the chiropractor might, although there's certainly lots of variety in what the chiropractors do, and they're good doctors.
Mm-hmm. So, but you're an osteopath who has a different focus from most osteopaths.
Yes.
Because you have not only the osteopathy, but you also have the acupuncture and the homeopathy.
Right.
How do you integrate these?
That was a big deal. That was a big struggle to do that. So I came out of school, kind of an orthopedic surgery background, internal medicine background, a heavy emphasis on osteopathic manipulation, and I got to study with Viola Fryman on the West Coast, a British doctor, who honed my skills in the thing called cranial sacral osteopathy, or head-tailbone osteopathy, the gentle techniques. So I came out that way, but then I evolved because the patient said, look, I don't want you to give me any medicine. And I said, well, okay, I got to go to acupuncture school if I'm going to avoid all medicine. So I went to acupuncture school, and that helped for a while. And then they said, well, I actually do need some sort of medicine. So then I went to homeopathic school for 3 years and studied that type of pharmacy and gave that to them. And then they came in and said, now I'm on these drugs, cardiac drugs. I can't get off, but I want you to treat me with all three. So it was really a difficult process. But I use the common denominator of balance. Don't suppress an illness to a deeper state in the body. And that's how I began to put it all together. But it was a lot of trial and error, lots of mistakes. But now I sort of feel natural about it as sort of a gestalt type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of easy for me now.
That's one of the advantages of growing older.
Yeah. Isn't it nice?
Well, yeah, it is nice. It is. So this is part of the, like, the evolution of your philosophy was to bring, your philosophy of practice was to bring these pieces together.
Yeah, they're all complementary to each other. And it, you know, the idea is try to keep the patient off drugs, reduce them or limit them in some way, and keep them out of the hospital and really try to avoid surgery.
You know, what's so interesting is that we think of these things as so different. You know, how can you be a physician and an an acupuncturist and a homeopath all at once? We separate these professions.
No, we really shouldn't separate them. And anybody who's a physician of any kind should go learn these things and practice them. We shouldn't put up barriers for people, because when we start doing that, we start fragmenting medicine. And when you fragment, people get treated symptomatically and the disease gets suppressed to a deeper level. And that is a big no-no. It makes people sick.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And I think we've both seen that in our own patients, too. And
oh, for sure.
Particularly the effect that fragmentation has, where patients are sent from doctor to doctor.
Ping-ponging. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it doesn't just make them sick physically. It makes them sick emotionally. Produces depression, panic disorders, all sorts of stuff.
And we know from, at least from Oriental medicine, that the mind, the body, and the spirit are all one.
Absolutely.
You can't treat one separately from the other.
No, it's not. It's impossible. And to think otherwise is kind of ludicrous. It's just that we've separated out these things because they're so complicated that we've created these limitations.
Well, for that, but also I think that our Western way of thinking tends to be a segmenting way.
Right.
It's easier to think of them as separate and put one person in charge of this, one person in charge of that.
Yeah, but it's sort of ridiculous in the end.
Right, right. So this is a good time for us to take a short break. When we return, we'll continue our discussion with Dr. Dane Shepherd and find out how each of us can make a difference in how medicine evolves. This is Rethinking Orthopedics, and I'm your host, Mary Rogel. We'll be right back.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
How many times have you heard this?
I'm sick and tired of feeling sick and tired.
You are what you eat.
I've tried every diet.
Diets don't work.
It's time to stop this kind of madness and start thinking and feeling empowered to change your health. Tune in to The Raw Truth with Chef Sharon Fraser. Join us weekly for thought-provoking conversations with world-renowned experts in the food, medical, holistic, sports medicine, chiropractic, and naturopathic health sciences. The Raw Truth airs live every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern on Voice America Health and Wellness. By making some important changes in your life, you can move forward from where you are to where you wish to be. It is becoming the change you want to see. It can be a sort of experiment, if you will. On Moving Forward, Wellness One Step at a Time, your host, Dr. Serena Wadhwa, will introduce you to ideas that can help improve your health, relationships, and finances. You probably have at least one part of your life that needs improving. Make an appointment now to join us every Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Your life, your health, your network. Voice America Health and Wellness.
This is Rethinking Orthopedics with Mary J. Rogel. If you have a question or comment about today's show, please give us a call at 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to rethinkingorthopedics@earthlink.net. Now, back to our show.
You're listening to Rethinking Orthopedics. I am your host, Mary Rogel. And with me today is Dr. Dane Shepherd, an osteopathic physician and surgeon who's been reshaping the practice of medicine and reshaping his patients' bodies for 36 years. We met because he ended up reshaping my body. And that was back in 1983. Dane, I first met you when I was just beginning to study acupuncture at the same school that we both went to. I came to you because I was having a lot of problems with my neck, and I had been to several chiropractors, another osteopath, and it had helped, but it still wasn't getting better. And people were starting to tell me about this osteopath downtown who really had a way of working with people, and he was different from the others, and why didn't I go see him? So I did. And it was your series of treatments literally changed my body and changed my life, changed the way that I practice. I was totally unprepared for what you did.
How come? What happened? This is exceptional, by the way, because I get to hear this 30 years later.
Yeah, 30 years later. And that I remember all this detail. I mean,
incredible.
That tells you how influential
it was.
Mm-hmm. The other people that I had been to treatment with did what I would call standard chiropractic, standard osteopathic. Mm-hmm. It was pretty predictable how they were going to work around the body and what they did. But
were they using the crunch techniques?
Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. The osteopath was a little bit different, but not really. He did the crunch techniques too. And that's really about it. That's about all.
Did it do any good for you at all?
It did. Oh, yes. It did some good for me, yes. Okay. But it got me to like a plateau.
And then you couldn't escape that plateau.
Right. And in fact, what was happening is that the high-velocity chiropractic adjustments, the reason I switched to osteopathy was that the high-velocity adjustments in my neck weren't holding at all. They didn't even hold to getting out of the chiropractor's office.
So in other words, it seems to me that the treatments were not really addressing the root cause. It was just symptomatic.
It was symptomatic, right.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
It was.
So you show up in my office. What happened next?
Well, I found out you were an acupuncturist.
Oh, yeah.
I was totally unprepared for that. I had no thought of ever going to an acupuncturist. I had just found out about an acupuncture school and just made arrangements to study there. And so here I am being treated with acupuncture. What happened with your treatment was that you did one treatment that I remember.
Really?
Yeah, it was one of the strange flows treatments, basically the four gates and CB12.
Right, and the four gates, we should tell our audience, are points in between the first and second toes, kind of on the top of the foot, mm-hmm. and then in between the first and second fingers, right that little thing that sticks up.
Yeah, in the webbing.
Yeah, in the webbing there. Mm-hmm. And the purpose of that, actually, to inform the audience, is to kind of sedate the nervous system and allow the body to change, but mainly to keep the body integrated, and it allows me to go much faster. I didn't know it then,
uh-huh.
but that's what it does.
Yeah, you went. It went really fast, and that one, you used the CB12, which is in mm-hmm. the upper abdomen. That point, what happened is, that's a point for digestion.
Yeah.
I don't know that I knew that at the time, but...
And you see the vagus nerve, it's the one that goes to all the organs inside, it goes to the stomach too. So I was trying to get at that because it has a reflex at the top of your neck on the left-hand side, and it was screwing up everything.
Okay.
So they were just treating the structure symptomatically,
right.
but we needed to get at the internal medicine aspect inside that was disturbing.
Well, you got to it.
Yeah.
You got to it, because what happened was a couple days after your treatment, I was working at one of the local hospitals at the time and going from one building to the next for lunch. And as I was walking down the steps, suddenly it was as though a switch turned on.
That's amazing.
Yeah, my body got warm. Mm-hmm. I'd always been cold, always felt cold no matter what the temperature was. That switch turned on, and my body's been normal temperature ever since
wow.
then. Yes. Yeah.
So there's two parts of the nervous system then. There's the part called the sympathetics and the parasympathetics. And the parasympathetics is for vegetative functions. The sympathetics are for the flight or fight response. And so these control the dilation of blood vessels. So in other words, the yin-yang, or the basic positive and negative, or negative and positive, however you want to say it, that balance occurred in your body at that point. And so it's what I said earlier. It's balance that we want. And when we brought you to balance, then you started to self-correct.
Mm-hmm. And I have used that treatment on other people
yeah.
since then. Probably not as effectively as you did. and then the other thing that surprised me about what you did is that when you did work on my neck,
yeah.
but you worked on much more than my neck.
Right.
You reshaped my face. You
right.
straightened my eyes out,
right.
and you moved the teeth in my mouth.
So you're saying I did techniques, intraoral techniques?
Intraoral techniques. You used
yeah.
your thumbs and you mm-hmm. you opened up the palate and the okay. teeth moved.
Okay.
And they've stayed that way.
Yeah. Yeah. So Viola Fryman taught me these techniques. And what we were doing was treating the sutures, or where bones come together in the skull and in the face. And they come together like your fingertips interlacing, and they have bevel changes as if you shove your hands together web to web. And yours were locked. And so we were disengaging that and reincorporating it into the normal motion patterns. That's the whole idea. If you can get the normal axes back and a normal motion back, then you get function and you get relief of symptoms. But the interesting thing is, I seldom do that today.
Really?
Yes. The evolution that has occurred in me is that I don't have to do the techniques like that anymore. I can treat in such a way, in kind of a layered way in the body, because of intent, where you're coming from and where you put your attention. It's a type of kind of neurologic selection that occurs in the body through touch. I don't even have to go into the mouth anymore or do those techniques.
So are you saying that it rearranges itself?
The body will, when you bring it to a point of balance, it unravels. It treats itself. All you got to do is bring it to that point of balance. But finding it is touchy, because you're looking at it in a lot of different ways. You're looking at it mechanically, internal medicine-wise, pharmacy-wise, surgical-wise, psychology-wise, spiritual-wise. And you're saying to the patient silently, what else, what else, what else? How can I meet your deepest need? And when you get down there to that point of pathology, you're duplicating the essence of the pathology. And when you duplicate it, then the body says, now I have to react to correct it. And the whole thing unravels. It's a much more sophisticated technique. It's a patient will say, you treat much deeper.
Mm-hmm.
Much deeper. And I know you treat the same way.
I certainly try to. And the reason I do is that I learned from you that it was possible.
Yeah.
And so I have spent my career trying to figure out how to do it because I didn't know about
Biola. Yeah, and you know, that's one of the things that propelled you and I forward, like saying, well, the diagnosis is this. Yeah. And you give this drug. Okay. Well, then what else? Well, that's it. You can't really change it. But why not?
Exactly.
You know, what if, why not? And now the only question left is, how do we figure it out?
Exactly.
And right. And that's what propels us forward and makes us evolve.
And that's the quote-unquote practice.
Yes.
Medicine.
Right.
Right. Finding
right.
those things. Well, so let me see if I understand this right. John Upledger does a lot of the cranial sacral work. And he does a balancing of the...
Yeah, John was one of my first instructors, and he was a trauma doctor in Florida. Before that, he was a biochemist, a researcher, and he went to DO school, and he became this trauma doctor that just treated people with heart attacks right off the beach. And so one day, he takes this cranial sacral course, this osteopathic course, and he decides to do research in it at Michigan State, and that led into him building this huge teaching system. He's no longer with us. He died probably, I think, 5 or 6 years ago in his 80s, but he left his daughter in charge. The big force, and so he popularized this throughout the world. You'll see his students in Europe. I've been to their clinics in Latin America, all sorts of things. And he taught a lot of psychologists as well.
Interesting.
But Viola Fryman, the British doctor that immigrated here, was really the primary force in osteopathy in this manner.
I had the privilege to be treated by Dr. Upledger.
Really?
Yes, he was doing a convention for acupuncturists, mm-hmm. and I was lucky enough to be one of the people who was his guinea pig for the day.
Yeah.
And it was quite astonishing.
It's dramatic.
Dramatic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it was different from what you did, because he was just holding... Mm-hmm. Whereas you were actually manipulating.
Well, in those days, yes, I was pushing and doing that type of thing, because those were direct action techniques that were general nature to separate bones that were engaged. What John is doing is he's treating at a deep level psychologically. He's dealing with these soft tissue coverings called fascia, and he's thinking of what he's doing all at the same time. Things that, you know, I developed later.
Mm-hmm. I guess the part I'm getting a little bit stuck on mm-hmm. is that we think of the bones as solid objects.
Not really.
Not really, okay.
Not really. They're just more dense. The body has kind of a bony structure, and then it has a soft tissue structure, and then it has a nervous system. And then it has fluids, and then it has electrical stuff. So as you go down, it's less dense. And the motion inside as they come upwards to more dense is not so fast inside. But they move faster on the outside. So there's a way of having a system that is rapidly responding on the inside, but yet stable on the outside. So that's what I mean when I treat in layers.
Okay.
And right. The reverse of that is culture.
Culture. Okay. And we are going to take a short break now from Rethinking Orthopedics. We'll come back to that concept of culture. When we return, we'll continue our discussion with osteopathic Dr. Dane Shepherd, who is one of only 100 physicians in the United States who practices osteopathic medicine in the way he does, if there are even 100.
Yeah, I think it's much less.
Much less. So we'll be right back.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Holy hormones, honey! Every week, this groundbreaking radio show brings you insight about hormone fluctuations, addressing the core biological issues that cause mood disorders, and offers a general support center for women everywhere at any stage in their lives. Host Leslie Carroll Botha has the passion and drive to help you make informed decisions about your well-being and reclaim your life. Holy Hormones, Honey, sponsored by True Hope Incorporated, the leaders in brain health, is broadcast live every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern, on Voice America Health and Wellness. Find the healer within you. Listen for Chella's Chat with host Chella Zappia. Does your physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual life seem out of balance? Often this lopsided outlook is what drives depression, and that can lead to illness and other problems in your life. Chella's Chat is a discussion program featuring guest experts plus your input. All together, we'll help you understand that there is hope. Tune in to Chella's Chat every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Your life, your health, your network. Voice America Health and Wellness.
This is Rethinking Orthopedics with Mary J. Rogel. If you have a question or comment about today's show, please give us a call at 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to rethinkingorthopedics@earthlink.net. Now, back to our show.
And welcome back. You're listening to Rethinking Orthopedics. I'm your host, Mary Rogel. And my guest today is Dr. Dane Shepherd, an osteopathic physician and surgeon in practice for 36 years and a teacher of other doctors. We've been talking in the last segment about reshaping bodies, and now we're going to move on to reshaping the practice of medicine. We could ask the question, why do we need to rethink orthopedics? And that's the title of this show, Rethinking Orthopedics. So we're going to deal with those issues. Now, it's interesting, Dane, you and I have not been in contact over all of this time, and yet we've come to a very similar way of thinking, namely that we as healthcare professionals and as patients in need of medical care ourselves need to rethink orthopedics and need to rethink medicine in general. Why do we need to rethink how all aspects of medicine are practiced?
Well, I think we've lost our way. Medicine evolved into specialties and sub and sub specialties. But who's looking at the whole person?
Mm-hmm.
You need a whole doctor for the whole person. Specialists are great. You know, they've saved my life. They've saved family members.
Yes.
Lots of people.
Saved my life, too.
Sure. Okay, so they're really important. But I'm certain that you've had the experience, like, where did you get that drug? Oh, I went to Dr. So-and-so. Where'd you get that drug? Dr. So-and-so. Did they ever call each other? No, they never call each other.
Right.
Okay, that's just impossible, because all of a sudden you see 6, maybe 12 drugs,
mm-hmm.
and they start to conflict with mm-hmm. each other. They have effects, side effects, repressions, suppressions. A thing called a carotenoid score, which is an antioxidant index, can be reduced dramatically with all of these drugs. So, you know, medicine has evolved to cutting, irradiation, and drugging. So, where's the healing?
Yes, I think that's the real question. Where is the healing?
Yeah, and who's got time to get on the phone to talk to all these guys? So, really, you need a guy that's, you know, kind of the Walmart,
mm-hmm.
you know, one-stop shopping, or at least someone that knows where to send you.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing I've noticed with many of my patients is that they have all these doctors and nobody's in charge.
No, nobody's in charge. It's God, who's running this thing?
Right. Well, and what I find sobering is that sometimes I've had to be the one.
Yes.
Which, you know, that's...
It's not bad.
It's not bad, but... with all those other people involved, why did no one else ask the question?
Because they're specialists.
Exactly. And I think
that's... They just do what's in front of them. That's how they keep their sanity, because medicine is quite complicated.
It's very complicated, right.
And it's ordained by insurance companies, by protocols of medicine, which are treating the macro, but not treating the micro, meaning we treat a disease, but who... in God's name, is treating the person.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, that's what I really like about your approach and how you've been talking about medicine today.
Yeah.
All these layers that need to be addressed and that you can address as a single practitioner.
Right. So the layers have to move over each other and communicate with each other. They got to be integrated. So you and I leave the patient integrated. When people are fragmented out there, you know, the parts don't talk to each other. Not only the physicians don't talk to each other, but they leave the patient, part A and part B aren't talking to each other. When that happens, we've got a lot of dysfunction.
We do. We do. Well, let's take an example.
Sure.
A common orthopedic case of a ruptured disc.
Okay.
What would the standard orthopedic approach be, and what would you do differently?
Okay, this happened to me.
Okay.
It was bad. I was coming back from my California practice. I noticed I had symptoms. They got worse and worse and worse. So I went to, let's see, my family practitioner first.
Mm-hmm.
It was a little too vague. He couldn't quite call it, okay? But he gave me some medicine. Unfortunately, I did not know that that medicine impacts on part of the brain.
Oh.
That also is related to the subconscious and the trauma that were affecting my subconscious,
mm-hmm.
okay, from an early childhood injury. Okay, so I took it, and all of a sudden I became really disoriented. So I went off, then I took a step up, went to an internist, and he says, yeah, I think you do have a disc issue, and you better go to the emergency room right now. What I remember about the emergency room is I proposed to the nurse, I proposed to an ex-wife, and I proposed to whoever else was standing near me. Because they gave me huge sedative doses and huge morphine doses. Very bad move for me. Very bad.
Wow.
So I was in there the entire day. I remembered proposing. And then after proposing, I remembered being in the CAT scanner.
Hmm.
Okay, and then they sent me home, and it was a long wait to go see the neurologic surgeon. Well, the drugs had so impacted my body that I lost my speech. I lost my entire
balance system.
I fell directly downward on a cement floor 4 times with a huge vertical impact force coming up through my spine, possibly causing severe neurologic damage.
Because you already had a hernia disc.
I lost all my memory. I didn't know where I was, who was taking care of me. I didn't recognize people. There were severe drug side effects going on there. And all of that was, in a subconscious way, not known to me, triggering traumatic events that happened early. There were very severe traumas at age 5. So my nervous system was completely disrupted and discombobulated. So I end up finally at the neurosurgeon's office, and he said, and I'd known him for 40 years. I mean, he's a tremendous surgeon. He said, okay, we're going to do a microdiscectomy, and you're going to go over here, and we're going to get it done, and you'll resolve. Okay. So I go there, and all of a sudden, I don't know what it is about modern medicine. People don't talk to each other. I get there. They haven't transferred my records.
Oh, no.
They don't know about allergies. They don't know cardiac status, which was pretty important in this case. And they didn't know anything about the morphine that they gave me and all that stuff. And the nurse just started to shoot the stuff into the IV. I grabbed it, kinked up the IV, and I said, no, we're aborting surgery. I want to talk to an anesthesiologist, and I want to talk to a pharmacist. So I did. And I guess 4 hours later, they started the surgery, and it was very successful. And I got through it. Okay. Later, I had terrible problems because the nerve had to grow back.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when a nerve grows back, there's a rate difference. So the bigger round it is, you know, those things kind of go last. So I had pain, I had burning, I had numbness, and I couldn't work for 4 months.
Mm.
And I didn't have a memory. I still had a lot of drug side effects. Okay. So that's how you treat a ruptured disc.
Okay.
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 That's the old way of doing it. The new medicine approach was what I tried to instigate. Now, you know, I was my own doctor running my own case. So that's like a fool for a patient,
yeah,
right?
Okay. Right.
So, but there's a happy ending to this story. So I go to an acupuncturist, and he treats me. I started to finally resolve. The scar tissue got better. All the symptoms were going down. I was able to get around on crutches. I actually got back to work. I was able to travel and everything. But now I still have to deal with the drug side effects. Okay, how am I going to do that? Well, so I went to my homeopath, Dr. George Scooby. Now, he's been a homeopath for probably 50 years. He's unbelievably excellent. So the first thing to do was to start with the global toxicity of the morphine and its effects. So he dealt with that. Then he dealt with the sciatic symptoms. And then he dealt with the organ that metabolized the morphine. And it was very successful, and I resolved after that. So he was doing something to balance. So was the acupuncturist as well. And I had some cranial sacral osteopathic manipulation as well. And so by blending these things together, creating balance rather than fragmenting things, mm-hmm. like anesthesiologist, pharmacist, neurosurgeon, family practitioner type.
But now you were going to different people, so how is that not fragmented?
Well, it was fragmented, but let's put it this way. At least I was a highly informed health consumer.
Yes, you were.
And so I would say, you know, really, don't treat with spleen 6, you know, because it's picking up the liver, and it's really recoiling off the liver, and we got a problem. So let's take a more global approach. And the guy was really pleasant and nice, and he cooperated with me.
So could you kind of summarize for our listeners what you would consider the new medicine approach to be?
Well, the new medicine approach, it may use drugs, surgery, osteopathic manipulation, homeopathy, acupuncture, all that stuff. But the idea is don't fragment and balance and don't repress or suppress. If you do the last one, you're going to make the patient really sick. And that's what they did to me. And I got really sick. It affected my nervous system very dramatically, very severely, when they suppress like that.
So if I could just then kind of summarize here, what we're talking about is that doctors have been working in fragmented specialties. And
it's not their fault.
It's not their fault.
No, it's the way medicine works.
It's because it's so complicated.
Yeah.
But what could happen is working together, well, either that the doctors themselves work with each other in a different way,
right.
Or that doctors will have multiple specialties or multiple...
I think what has to happen is that the doctor... has to, you know, in some medicine, the doctor is just railroaded right into that specialty. They mm-hmm. don't deliver babies. They don't do this or that. And so they're just geared in a very narrow way because some of these specialties are 6 years long. They can't be in medical school forever.
Right.
All right. But what has to happen is that anybody that wants to be a neurosurgeon should also do family practice stuff, should deliver babies, should be on general internal medicine floors and things like that. Many are. But there should be a more global approach before you specialize and subspecialize. That will be helpful. And number two is that there should be the recognition that, say, someone who is a neurosurgeon should also be able to do acupuncture or homeopathy or osteopathy. I mean, why not?
Why not is right. We're going to come back to this topic in a few moments. We need to take a short break. When we return to Rethinking Orthopedics with my guest, Dr. Dane Shepherd, we'll talk more about the training of healthcare providers, the fragmentation of medicine, and how we can affect where medicine is going as it evolves. So we'll be right back.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Sit back. Close your eyes. Relax. Have you explored the possibilities of yoga? It transcends time, space, and culture. It has healing properties, and it can be done by anyone. Tune in to Yoga Begins Now with Mark and Heather Cherie Titus. Mark and Heather are the team behind the Sedona Yoga Festival. Our program will bring yoga out of the studio and into your life with lively discussions, special guests, and an in-depth exploration of modern yoga. Yoga Begins Now. Join us every Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Do you or someone you love struggle with Alzheimer's disease or some other disorder? Many times, there is not an adequate support forum where you can learn from and discuss topics from top guest experts. Tune in to NeuroMatters, The Brink of Alzheimer's with Dr. Sam Brinkman. Although thought of as a disease that affects only older individuals, increasingly, symptoms are being found in people who are in their 40s and 50s. Get the answers. NeuroMatters airs live Tuesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
This is Rethinking Orthopedics with Mary J. Rogel. If you have a question or comment about today's show, please give us a call at 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to rethinkingorthopedics@earthlink.net. Now, back to our show.
And welcome back for our final segment today of Rethinking Orthopedics. I'm your host, Mary Rogel. My guest today is Dr. Dane Shepherd, an osteopathic physician and surgeon who has taught doctors on three continents. So we're going to talk a little bit now about changing medicine, how we can be involved in changing it. I want to start out by asking you, Dane, you've had in-depth opportunities to observe and influence how medicine is taught in these various countries. What have you learned from practicing and teaching in four different countries?
Wow, that's really a big question.
It's a big question.
I think that culture is an overriding influence in how medicine is practiced. I remember sitting here at this same table with two Ecuadorian physicians, and the patient was a Mexican woman, and I said, well, is that untoward, what she said about her husband? Oh, yeah. Oh, my God, a woman should never say such and such a thing. Well, for an American, just no big deal. You know, We get kicked around all the time on both sides of the fence. But God forbid should a woman say this to her husband, You know, and to these Ecuadorian physicians. See, so things like that. So I learned those things. I also learned that the doctor down there has to do everything. And So guess what? It's integrated.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Because it's a different infrastructure.
Yes. But also they don't have the concept of referral the way we do. The referrals happen at the insurance company level. So they actually maintain the records of the patient, and a physician that's ahead of the company will refer them to different doctors. It doesn't always happen at the physician level. So the physician is an island unto himself.
Okay.
So it's kind of what we would like to achieve here.
You know. And kind of the way you and I practice.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And these guys all know the patient families. They have to go to the funerals. They have to go to the birthdays. Okay. And God forbid they don't. They're ostracized not only by the patient, but the patient's husband, the patient's siblings, the uncles and aunts. And they just kiss off a whole segment of their practice if they don't observe that. So they really know in depth the family.
That's interesting. It reminds me of something about when we were being trained, when I was being trained as an acupuncturist, there was this notion that you shouldn't touch your patients outside of the therapeutic method that you're using. So, for example, you shouldn't hug your patient to say goodbye.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. This is ridiculous. And you know, psychologists are not allowed to touch
exactly.
The house.
Right. Yes. And here's the child crying, and you can't take the child into your arms.
This is absurd.
Yes.
Hug a patient a day. That's what I say.
I think I end up hugging more than that.
Yeah.
But So what can healthcare providers currently in practice in this country do to improve the practice of medicine?
I think you should never stop learning. First of all, to be a doctor, you got to be a compulsive monomaniac. But really, when you get out, then it becomes a targeted thing. And feel free to branch out.
Yes.
There's quite a bit
There's
of
so much to learn.
There's so much to learn. Do what you want to do. Do what makes you happy, what makes your patients healthy. But go do it.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
embellish your understanding.
Mm-hmm. What about for patients? What can they do to assist their healthcare providers to be more effective practitioners?
They need to be honest, and they need to be forthright, and they need to say to the doctor what's going on. Because they don't. They get in there, they're rushed, they're short appointments, and so they feel constrained in some way. No.
It's hard to think under those circumstances.
Oh, I just say, you know, I'm a doctor.
Well, you're a doctor.
I
you can
throw
say
my
that.
Weight around.
Right.
But still, and I did that one time in the hospital. But really, come on. You know, this person is your doctor. He's got to know you as a patient. He's got to know that you're ticked off at your spouse or that the drug had some sort of reaction or that you're afraid. You got to tell him. They're human beings. They'll react.
That's true. But now I've had clients who have spoken up to their physicians about things,
sure.
and they've been dismissed as patients.
Yes. Yes. I know. Well, guess what? Change doctors.
Change doctors. I guess they have no choice at that point.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, they really don't, unless they're diplomats.
True.
But we don't want to give the doctors a bum rap here.
No.
Because they're under the gun these days. They have to see patients very fast under a lot of pressure, and they've sold their practices, and so they have to do the bidding of their overseers and stuff like that. And often, I've had physicians say that people have stood outside their doors with a time stopwatch.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
So they're under pressure, too.
They're,
but still,
yes.
come on. You're the patient. Say what's wrong.
And go to the people who are making these demands on the doctors,
too. Go to the people that will listen to you.
Yeah. Well, I have an idea that I've been tossing out to my...
Go to the doctor that cares about you.
That's a good point.
That's the common denominator.
Yeah.
If you don't feel that, move on.
Now, I have an idea that I've been tossing about to my colleagues and my patients for the past few years, and I'd be curious what you think about it. I've been saying that we should all just have the same healthcare provider license, that we shouldn't be divided up by the various professions that we're in, because what we're doing is we're having turf battles. And so my feeling is that if you want to combine medicine and acupuncture, do it. Get trained in both. Do both. If you want to be a dentist and use manual therapies on your patient's jaws, do it, but be trained in both of them. Same thing, I've seen psychologists and psychotherapists who know an awful lot about drugs and diet, and yet they're not allowed to counsel their patients.
Yeah, there's such a thing as body-centered psychotherapists. Okay, they're touching the patient. Okay, that's out of the scope of the licensure,
mm-hmm.
but you don't have to touch very much. It doesn't have to be a moderate, but it can have a profound effect on the psyche.
And it seems to me that it's inevitable that we in the different professions are going to come to some common ways of treating people.
Yeah. In acupuncture, remember Paul used to tell us, what everybody agrees on over 5,000 years, that's probably okay.
It's probably okay.
Yeah, that's
right.
What Paul used to say. Yeah.
That's right. Now, we don't have 5,000 years here doing this medicine, but we're already seeing how chiropractic and osteopathy and various manual therapies, massage, that there are commonalities among
Absolutely.
How we treat people.
Sure.
How can and when you're working with your hands and you feel something, how can you stop yourself from learning that thing that you're going to learn from that patient?
You should not. You should learn. Otherwise, you don't evolve. You're treating the same bladder infection with the same drug, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't be that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I would just, I guess, sum that part up by saying, instead of stifling creativity, I would like to see us learn it. Encourage it.
Definitely.
Do you have any closing comments that you would like to make?
Well, this has been an exceptional experience because 30 years later, I get to see what osteopathy
what you did.
Yeah, it's pretty unique. So I'm very happy to be here tonight, Mary. That's really my closing statement.
Okay.
It's a pleasure and a privilege to be with you.
Well, I feel the same, and
thank you
very much for being my guest tonight. Our listeners who'd like to contact Dr. Shepherd can reach him through his website, www.daneshepherddo.com. So that's daneshepherddo.com. And let me repeat that one more time, www.daneshepherddo.com. And I'd like to thank our listeners and to thank the staff at Voice America for making this show possible. In particular, I'd like to thank our engineer tonight, Michael Sergette, and my executive producer, Nicole Marshall, who made the initial contact that brought Dr. Shepherd and me back into contact. So this has been Rethinking Orthopedics. I'm your host, Mary Rogel. You may listen to this show again at any time on the Voice America website. And eventually, it will also be on Dr. Shepherd's website, www.daneshepherddo.com, and on my website, www.eastpointassociates.com. Tune in again next week. Thank you.
Thank you again for tuning in this week. Mary Rogel will be back with another edition of Rethinking Orthopedics next Wednesday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Until then, may you focus on great health.